The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? End of the line, Joel is there. We have a Rumble exclusive tonight. James Watson has died, one of the last real scientists. Because the generation after him, they were too cocked and they started trying to fudge the truth, they started being incapable of engaging on race and intelligence. Yet here he was at 97 years old. So you have to have someone who has survived 97 years old to have a scientist that comes from before the academia was basically becoming this censorship era of academia, where they started ideologically pursuing Marxism even through the hard sciences, and progressively in the 90s you had the last psychologist who could still say that race was linked to intelligence genetically. And then you had a free thinker like James Watson, who was so old. He was not a psychologist, but he was old enough to not give a fuck. And that's what led to they attempted to cancel this guy after he had a Nobel Prize and after he had discovered the double helix structure of DNA. This is what's amazing. They will try to that level. Now, at this point in my generation, if you think like me, you cannot make it in the academia. So at this point in my generation, if you somehow have read the race and intelligence facts of the world and believe them, then you're a streamer. But with James Watson, it was another generation. So you could have still free thinkers of that age that happened to have been employed in academia. Because, well, for first, James Watson only came out very late about these provocative statements. So he had built all of his history as kind of a ninja, with his power levels hidden, and he made it. You could think that he's a little bit like what Nick Fuentes counsels to young people, to be shutting up about it, to be making your way through the institutions, gaining power, and then coming out at the end of your life with your power level. Personally, it's a life I've decided I cannot live this. I cannot live in denial of the truth on the everyday. It's way too cognitively heavy, and so I decided to draw a different path for myself in free publication of books, self-published, No authorization to ask. So there's various attitudes with what do we do with the fact that the academia has veered into a Marxist brainwashing thing. Meanwhile, we'll also talk about the Tucker cost because this is too funny. The Jews have not come back from it yet. They are still under shock that Tucker Carlson interviewed Nick Fuentes, and oh my God, they keep talking about it. It's like there's no way you can amplify an interview more than this. It's amazing how insulted they are, and there's lots of victories to celebrate. All right, and you guys let me know about the stream tonight. I did some changes to my bandwidth, but I think it wasn't the bandwidth last time. It was buffering. probably because of a local internet problem with my ISP. The winter was coming. The wires were getting shook a lot. So I went and fixed a little bit my optics inbox. You know, the thing that lets the optic cable into the house. I hope that this combined with slightly lower bandwidth, I hope that this will fix it. So the discovery of DNA, it's a long story. If this is a very good telling of the story by nature.com. 1869 was a landmark year in genetic research because it was the year in which Swiss physiological chemist Friedrich Miescher first identified what he called nuclein inside the nuclei of human white blood cells. So eventually that gets to be called the nucleic acid and deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA. So the substance was discovered to be in the nucleus before we could understand it was a code. And Schrödinger, the physicist who had such a beautiful sentence in advance, before we knew that nucleic acid was the carrier of the genetic code, he said the genetic code will be carried by... Let's find the words because I don't want to mess his quote. Schrödinger quote about DNA, about aperiodic crystals. It was such a visionary. In what is life? To give the statement life and color, Schrödinger says in the book, What is Life? To give the statement life and color, let me anticipate what will be explained in much more detail later, namely that the most essential part of a living cell, the chromosome fiber, may suitably be called an aperiodic crystal. And this idea of an aperiodic crystal is this idea that, okay, things become solid, like metals, they if you don't melt them at very high temperature, they become solid. And then the atoms all get aligned. They all get aligned in a structure that doesn't contain much information, other than if you have irregularities or imperfections in the crystal. A crystal is just a perfect, and in fact, with perfect diamonds, you have really perfect alignment of each of the atoms. And when Schrödinger calls what he thinks will be an aperiodic crystal, he's saying it will be a crystal that is made of different molecules such that information can be embedded into it. How visionary was this statement? An aperiodic crystal, one in which there will be no regular repetition of the molecules because they will always be varying to encode the information, to encode the genes. And ultimately, Watson is the one who stated the hypothesis or the theory or the conclusion that DNA must have been arranged in a double helix. There are various steps before Watson came. Chargaff in 1944 was one of a handful of scientists who expanded on Levine's work by uncovering additional details of the structure of DNA, thus paving the way for Watson and Crick. Demonstrated that hereditary units or genes are composed of DNA. This paper had a profound impact on Chargaff, inspiring him to launch a research program that revolved around the chemistry of nucleic acid. So it took minds that were very chemical-oriented minds. I'm not that much of an expert in chemistry. I know the molecules because of their role in biology, but I always come at it from an evolutionary theory perspective. But these guys, they were thinking in terms of chemistry. And when you look at how the James Watson and Crick paper are written, it is very much with chemical concerns. How do how do atoms of one kind attach to another? What bouts can attach? What bouts cannot attach? How can they form what they call salts or a free phosphate area? We wish to suggest, so that was the paper in 1953 by Watson and Crick. We wish to suggest a structure for the salt of DNA. So when you look at, when you try to determine the 3D structure of a molecule, you have to form a crystal from it. Not the crystals that Schrödinger was talking about, but an even more solid crystal, such that they arrange in a way that you can have a block of it and you can scan it with various rays that you bombard from all the angles. And it's the fact that these crystals are periodic that allows the technique to visualize them in 3D, which can give you, although it doesn't tell you everything, because it tells you the general 3D structure of the basic elements of the crystal or the salt. A structure for nucleic acid has already been proposed by Pauling and Corey. They kindly made their manuscript available, blah, blah, blah. So they argue that the alternative views are not as good. And they say the only way we find that it fits, the fact that it was known that the DNA pieces, they have a 3 prime and a 5 prime end. And to this day, this is correct. We know that. And they can connect one to the other. But there had been uncertainty about, is DNA basically a skeleton formed by repeated patterns of always the same CAGT, CAGT, CAGT? Or is there a way that the alphabet can be rearranged? And the solution that they found, that they proposed, was that there were actually 2 strands of DNA, one thing that was not proposed before. And that the 2 strands of DNA, they were pursuing their own sinusoidal, structure of oscillation, and that they were attached with complementary units where A connects to T, G connects to C, and being complementary, they can attach to each other, and they can also continue in the 5-3 direction leading to the length of the DNA molecule. So the double helix is what solved the mystery of how does this stay stable? How can it contain an alphabet that can encode information? Well, the double helix had 2 letters. They were reversed. In fact, it's one of the major aspects of DNA that allows the copying process. Once you separate the complementary strands, both have all of the information just in reverse. And so it makes the copy process efficient because you can complete one strand from not the double strand, but from a single strand. Also, the double helix provide a great deal of stability to this molecule. If you didn't have a double helix, it would be open to mutation and breaking. So here we have James Watson. So he got a Nobel Prize for this paper, this discovery of the double helix. And then later in life, he was old and he was starting to comment on intelligence. And I find that his commentary is extremely prescient about, it's very, very close to my commentary. It's kind of anarcho-primitivist, hostile to the modern developments of society. And you'll see, although he's old, so he has difficulty formulating his sentences, and it's not super clear. But you see that inside James Watson was a fundamental doubt about everything that we know from psychology, and that we are lying about ourselves from psychology. So one of his comments on race was, so we have a whole bunch of Marxists in academia telling us we need to train people more, we need to teach more, we need to equalize school to everyone, we need to keep people longer in school. And yet we have the evidence that says it seems that everything we could do isn't fixing it. It seems that it's more genetic. So that was one of his comments on race that got him canceled. He also mentioned that he thought that there was some link between melanin and intelligence. And he mentioned, you know, because we all know that the browner a race is, typically, the darker a race is, the least intelligent it is. And that is true. Now, I don't think it's caused by melanin. I think that there is simply a correlation between the need for intelligence and the sun. And melanin is an evolutionary response to the sun. And it just turns out that when you are in equatorial areas, you don't need as much intelligence, or perhaps intelligence is too costly to preserve given the caloric cost of the brain. And so I think that the evolutionary trade-off is about the sun. I don't think that melanin as a molecule is impeding on brain development. So here, we'll hear about him, about what he has to say about certain reflections on society and schooling.
Talking about the increasingly complex world in which everyone lives.
So see, the anarcho-primitivist side, we live in an increasingly complex world.
Making demands on... of people with lower intelligence.
So he says this modern complex world puts demands on people with lower intelligence. I think he got this wrong. I don't think the modern world puts demands onto the low intelligence people. To the contrary, I think we're keeping low intelligence people alive more than what nature would do. I think that if you had to produce your own food 400 years ago, that was an intelligence test. If you survive in 2025 in Sweden or Canada with maximal welfare support and every service you can possibly think for free, that is not testing. That is not demanding on the low intelligence. But I think he has a social view that is very influenced by the Marxist world. You know, even if he may have thought differently and he may have been a contrarian, I think he could not help but be fooled by the fact that, oh yeah, you see the world getting more complex. But wait a minute, the world may be getting more complex if you're listening to streams of scientists, PhD JF, okay? The world may be more complex from that perspective. But if you're the guy receiving welfare for free, not caring about it, not reading a single book, not engaging with universities, for these people, the world is much less demanding than it was 400 years ago.
That they can't easily handle. That is where, as we go more and more into a computer age, certainly if you're not...
Even the computer age, I mean... The computer age has made everything easier. You don't need to be a coder. You will benefit from the computer world even if you know nothing, even if you're stupid as a rock.
Can't handle a computer increasingly. You know, you can't be a shop assistant. You can't be... that we will sort of declare that... or find that we have a higher percentage of people that we now call unemployable or effectively become not.
So he's describing a subclass of people that in the modern world will be unemployable. I would say it's kind of beside the truth. I mean, we have invented DEI. We've employed these people knowing that they were unemployable, just for the fun of equalizing everything. So in a way, society has actively tried to make these statements false.
Unemployable because they're not very functional. And this percentage may be higher than it was 100 years ago because life, you can't live by your physical strength. You can't. You probably can't be a traffic warden unless you can use a cell phone. And right now the response of the increasing complexity of our lives is to say that we can solve this by keeping our children longer in school and making them learn more. And
see, he sees what's happening with society because he's lived long enough that he can see that we have a psyop that's being pulled on people here. That this delusion that you're going to keep people longer in school and it's going to fix things. The problem is the longer in school you keep certain people, the more you make this progression to university optional, the more people are self-selecting to have a longer scholar path. And the more in doing so, they are punishing themselves evolutionarily. So if you end up having, it's kind of a blessing that people are stupid and they go to university. Because if you had the most intelligent people going to university instead of making babies, then it would be punitive toward the higher intelligence. And we see it, it's in the data. Intelligence is punitive on reproduction rates. Shamrock Shake says, someone in a previous stream mentioned the Wright brothers didn't go to school. Oh yeah, I think this obligation of schooling, this obligatory schooling with a schedule that's defined by age is absolutely dangerous. And it's one of the things that got accepted by society and that we should review. There's much more efficient ways of teaching to a child anything that they could learn up to high school finish. You know, it's unbelievable that we take 18 years of people's life to do this.
Raising the age of the school leavers and I hope it works, but I don't think we should in any way.
I hope it works, but I don't think we should
count on it because
that we should count on that. So he's saying it won't work. It won't work. The strategy of equality via educational Marxism will fail.
IQ seems to be, as far as we can know, just stable through your life until modified by cognitive decline. That is, you don't get great changes. I was just in Edinburgh to meet Ian Reary, who's in charge of the Scottish data on studying IQs over the life. In 1947, they did the IQs of everyone in Scotland and repeated it 20 years later. Worried about cognitive decline, that people with lower IQs had more children. And you might find a dysgenic component, but they found no change. So that was. But, you know, logically, you say maybe it's true, but, you know, there wasn't.
I don't think we'll capture a dysgenic component over 20 years, but I have no doubt that we are in a dysgenic slope. That will probably be observable over longer periods.
Big enough. Whether the fact that the IQ stayed the same because IQ clearly has to be affected by education on the short term. And there's an effect called the Flynn effect, which seems to be real, that IQs have increased over time, but not in the basic core things that they say contributes to G, the things that correlate between different tasks, general intelligence. That has not increased much, but sort of, we've been more stimulated early in childhood, we can handle more. Which would mean that, you know, we can do things at an earlier age than we could before.
So he believes the Flynn effect is mostly an illusion. It's not increasing G, it's not increasing general intelligence. It's just that people are more adapted to answering questions and answer. They're not more intelligent, but they at younger age, they are more capable of answering test demands. I think that makes absolute sense. I believe the Flynn effect is largely an illusion. Some of it may be true due to the fact that you have basically white populations teaching children from poorer, less intelligent races with the parental standard of a white population. But this will all disappear as we get DEI employment in the schools, as we get the return to the mean, and as we get the dysgenic effect of the fact that we don't select for intelligence anymore. Sexy Colors sends $40. Thank you so much for the generous donation. The show runs on your donations, guys. So thank you so much. He says, hey, this is James from the Discord. Thanks for making the best show on the internet for all these years. Awesome. Thank you very much. Very appreciated. So what we had here is a James Watson who not only, you know, deployed some critical chemical understanding of the structure of DNA that is now part of our corpus of knowledge forever, at the time where it was needed in the 50s, where we didn't have much molecular understanding of molecular biology then. It's been exploding since him. But he kind of gave a big boost to that field. And then later in life, he continued operating his laboratory, and he guided all sorts of students. I was looking at letters of discussions between him and various postdoc and other researchers, and here they were talking about the problem of the haploid egg and the diploid chicken. They were thinking about the historical, the evolutionary history of haploid, diploid cells, sexual division, meiosis, recombination. They were talking about what should we do with HIV. Maybe we should concentrate on the moment where HIV exports itself into DNA form. They were thinking about all sorts of things in relation to RNA and DNA, and where could a molecular intervention lead to a new medication or a new insight. Yeah, and then they tried canceling him. I think it was a couple of years ago. I remember covering it on a stream. They tried canceling him for his statements about race and IQ, which are absolutely true. No one serious is denying these things. The idea that, yeah, intelligence is caused by genes, and the variations in intelligence are caused by genes. And the gene variations between the races appear that they are, just like they are within races, they appear that they are responsible for the intelligence differences. But this delusion that everyone must have the same potential, this Marxist delusion, is what has led people to cancel him. But the only people who are not saying that race and IQ are tied are media people. They're really not arguing about the truth. They're arguing about what we should say and what we can't say. They're the cancel culture people who cancel not by the standard of is it true, but by the standard of is it sayable? Should we be able to say it? So James Watson, at the end of his life, I didn't know that our friend Edward Dutton wrote a book about James Watson and interviewed him. There was a picture. Edward Dutton published a picture on his Twitter. It's great to see that he had a free thinker to interact with late in life. And at some point, I think he was mentioning that because he got fired, he got fired and canceled from his Cold Springs laboratory directorship, which I mean, at his age, at 97 or at 95 when it happened, it must have been a relatively symbolic position that he was holding, because at this age, you're really not in shape to truly direct research. But I think he was mentioning that he wanted to sell his Nobel Prize. He wanted to sell his medal to survive after being fired. I'm sure he didn't need money. If he's been employed at universities for that long. Sour Note says, I believe whites who are more evolutionarily similar to their hunter-gatherer ancestors are ill-adapted for our carb-saturated environments and therefore less capable of restricting carb consumption. Absolutely, something like this must be true. Certainly, the modern world gives us too many calories, and we have to evolve a kind of response to this, which is pretty easy. I mean, it's just that fat people are less attractive, and so people who, even in an environment of caloric surplus, are capable of having this kind of self-control or self-discipline, they will be selected because they're more beautiful. And I have no doubt that in 50, 100 years from now, the obesity problem will be a very different thing. I'm not saying it will have disappeared, but it will certainly have been subject to a selection. And there might be less of it. All right, the Tucker cost. It's another a la cost. People are losing their shit over the fact that Tucker Carlson interviewed Nick Fuentes. We've had Ben Shapiro being spoken to by Megyn Kelly on stage. They're sharing video game footage of Nick Fuentes shooting Jews in GTA. And we have CNN covering the whole thing.
President of Heritage, and he is in damage control. I mean, initially he defended Carlson's interview. It was an interview that drew bipartisan outrage over comments like this.
And I think that neoconservatism, where does it arise from? It arises from Jewish leftists who were mugged by reality when they saw the surprise attack in the Yom Kippur War.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of it for sure. But then, like, how do you explain Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, and there are a lot like that, John Bolton. I mean, I've known them all. George W. Bush, like the Karl Rove. I mean, all people I know personally who I've seen like be seized by this brain virus, mm-hmm. and they're not Jewish.
What you're saying about putting aside the tribal interest for the corporate interest, yes. That's absolutely the case. The main challenge to that, a big challenge to that, is organized Jewry in America.
Now, this is where you get to appreciate the genius of Nick Fuentes. If you have watched the Tucker interview as a radical, you may have felt that Nick Fuentes was not strong enough. But in a way, Nick Fuentes was preparing for being clipped by CNN. And now you have organized Jewry on CNN. That is beautiful art. And this is something finer than people think. To be able to introduce certain ideas and go easy on people, go easy on the normies. This is what Nick Fuentes has perfectly done here. Because he comes to Tucker, it's a chill conversation, And it's the fact that the conversation is chill that becomes the point of frustration of the whole system. That is beautiful. And the fact that in a chill conversation, he slips in organized jewelry, that is very important. I don't remember when we started using that word, but I remember it was within my lifetime. I know that the words come, you know, they've been used before. But in streaming, I remember there was a point, I don't even know if it was me that decided to do it out of an inspiration from Nick using it, or is it me that started using it in the TPS days and he started using it after? I don't even remember. But at a point, we started using this term, and it's an important term because it kind of undermines a lot of the strawmen that we usually have to face. I did the same yesterday on Richard Spencer. I talked about organized womanry, and I had a radical femme Hitler, RFH, try to argue against me and say, oh, no, it's not all women. All women on average, they don't vote Zoran Mamdani. And I was like, no, organized womanry is different than all women. And organized Jewry is different than all Jews. We're talking about a subset of people who are pursuing radically either the interest of Israel for the Jews or the interest of feminist and woman for organized womanry. But we're talking about a minority of revolutionaries in these populations who are taking control of everything. And it's not the average Jew that you see on the streets of New York. That's a problem. The problem is that there is just too much power into a select, sect-like, mafia-like group of people that happen to pursue Jewish interests because they're Jews. But it's not all Jews and it's not all women. All of this is very well captured by the term organized. So we're talking about an organization here. We're talking about a select group that are communicating with each other. And the fact that Nick was successful at dropping it on Tucker, kind of under the rug, Tucker doesn't say much about it, and then it gets on CNN. That is art. That is how you manipulate modern media to make a point.
So Roberts now says that he was wrong to defend Carlson over that interview, but maybe it is too late. I mean, Republican after Republican are now calling out both Carlson and Heritage, including Republican Congressman Randy Fine, who is Jewish.
When widely respected conservative thought leaders like Tucker Carlson go insane, because that's what he has become, people start to believe it. We ended our relationship with Heritage. We're working with many Jewish groups that have ended their relationship with Heritage. And
this is the art of Nick Fuentes, okay? Because what do we have here? We have a Jew bragging about cancel culture. I mean, isn't it beautiful? I mean, you have even the host of CNN who said, who is Randy Fine, who is Jewish? And now you have a Jew with a hat of a Jew basically praising cancel culture. So, oh, yes, we're currently canceling Tucker. Well, that's the whole problem, isn't it? That's the whole... we're currently coordinating with organized... That's organized Jewry. We've spoken to a lot of Jewish organizations. Organized Jewry. We are making sure that they will not work with Tucker. Organized Jewry orchestrating cancel culture. That is what I'm seeing. It's not what I'm seeing when I watch Nick. At this point, it's what I'm seeing on CNN. How much winning do you need?
Really, I have to do is talk to my colleagues, because the biggest issue we have with Tucker Carlson is people remember the Tucker Carlson of 5 years ago. That's what
there was a time where he was more friendly to us and we weren't canceling him back then. We want to cancel him now because he's taken a stance against organized Jewry.
makes him so dangerous.
KFAL's Andrew Kaczynski is now out front. And Andrew, I mean, this is all fascinating. And I sort of saw it percolating on X a little while ago, and it just got bigger. And you know, when you can.
You know, I saw this phenomenon. There were these accounts and they were complaining about certain things. And I kind of ignored it. And I saw it grow and grow and grow. It's like, and Nick Fuentes had the right words for this yesterday on his show. He was saying, can you just stop? Can you stop? Can you stop just trying to look the other way? This is exactly what she's describing here. Stop looking the other way. It's very simple. It's not that I'm a psycho. It's not that I'm a genocidal maniac. It's that we are opposed to the disbalance of power that currently is chokeholding America, which is too many Jews in power. Period. That's it. And there's maybe 50x too much of it, if you go by proportional of the population. 50x. So we need to divide it by 50. And then you'd have a balanced political process. As long as the mere fact of stating this gets you canceled by Randy Fine with his Jewish hat, the problem is still going. It's very simple. We don't want to put anyone in the ovens, says Nick Fuentes yesterday. It's not about putting you guys in the ovens. It's about balance of power. Can you not see it? If 99% of the politicians were, I don't know, fans of basketball, there would be a problem. There would be basketball advantages in Washington, and basketball would be advantage as a business over hockey and baseball. And it would be weird. But of course, basketball isn't overrepresented in our political process. Israel's support is.
Start to tell something is metastasizing in the social media world, and it appeared to be. So you've been talking to a lot of people with
metastasizing, like it's a cancer.
In the Heritage Foundation. What are they saying?
That's right, Aaron. So the staff that we talked to told us the Heritage Foundation is in open revolt over the president's defense of Carlson. One senior staffer told us it was a, quote, absolute.
Same thing as Charlie Kirk, by the way. You know how Candace highlights a lot of the bizarre relationship between these cocked staffers and the CEO? At TPUSA, it was a bunch of staffers and Charlie Kirk. And Charlie Kirk was going forward further than what his professional staff wanted him to do. Because you see the shows that degenerate now that Charlie is dead. There's kind of a, it's more cocked, okay? The same thing happens across organizations, and I've always described it. It's the CEO, the founder, the guy on front is a bolder man. Is always a bolder man. That's how he got there. Whether it's by founding the whole thing or by slipping into it but being selected for that. Whereas the staffers, they're professional of politics. They're really like they're dirty creatures. They're fucking psychopaths. And they write speeches and they know all of the implications of each of the words. So I'm not surprised that this Robert guy is Kevin Roberts. Is getting pushed back from his staff. They want the safe path. They want the continued pay. Whereas the bolder guy thinks about the truth and thinks about being honest to the public and fairness and free speech principles. The staff don't have to think about consistency of principle. They're just getting a check. They want that check to continue. They don't want any noise. They don't want throwing mud.
Absolute shit show inside the organization, saying that Roberts had, quote, lost control over the organization. He said there's an open rebellion, and this really all came to a head.
And this is why organizations are unfit to pursue fairness, truth, or, you know, bold pursuits of any kind. Because organizations are social creatures, and they are subject, I'm sure that you know, this Roberts guy is facing employees that are now not doing what he wants just to mess him up, just the way Trump had difficulty in his first presidency dealing with revolutionaries.
Yesterday, where they had this all hands meeting, this, like you said, this was kind of going around social media, where Roberts publicly apologized. According to a recording we obtained, Roberts told employees, quote, "I made a mistake. I let you down. I let this institution down. I'm sorry," period.
This guy has to stop. He was just, he was right there. He was just fine. There is no reason for him to continue going the apology route. He was fine. And it's like, it's half apologies. I don't even understand them. I don't understand. Is he, I made a mistake. Okay, what was your mistake? To stand for free speech? To not call out Tucker Carlson, not join the cancel mob. What the fuck are you talking about? These guys, they have social, I don't know how to phrase it. They have these social pressures that push them to inconsistency.
Full stop, but he also made clear he has no plans to resign. Now, we also obtained messages between senior Heritage staff earlier in the week where they were discussing the situation. I want people to look at some of these messages that we looked at. One of them described the workplace as, quote, flailing and in damage control. Another said, "This makes me sad and mad," in a comment to another top level staffer. One senior staffer reposted a colleague saying, "This crap is really hurting Heritage," and added, "As it should." Another wrote, "I'm disgusted by this, and I don't understand how this premeditated and orchestrated response," is talking about the initial Roberts video, "could come out of one of the biggest think tanks in the world." The source who provided this to us basically said they didn't want these names to be identified for fear of retaliation. And Aaron, this backlash is not just limited to the staff of Heritage, it's also reaching the foundation's donors. One major donor whose organization contributes more than $500,000 annually to Heritage Foundation told us that they had totally lost faith in Roberts. You can see their quote right there. They said, "I'm waiting to see."
So here we are, cancel culture. We're canceling by 2 degrees of guilt by association, by the way. So we're not going to give money to someone who advocated for free speech because free speech was used by a host, Tucker Carlson, who eventually invited someone to speak with him, Nick Fuentes. There's 3 degrees of guilt by association here. We don't want to be the donor to this organization who believes in free speech because free speech was used by Tucker, and Tucker used that free speech to talk to Nick Fuentes. Holy shit! The cuckery of this world is trying to come back strong, but I don't think they can win. Big Time Ape says, "Whatever you do, JF, take an all-expense paid trip to Israel." Never take an all-expense paid trip to Israel. You know what? I will follow your counsel.
How things play out, but if Kevin remains as president, we will not be giving to Heritage. Likewise, the Zionist Organization of America, that's actually the oldest pro-Israel group in the United States, announced that it was withdrawing from Heritage's initiative on anti-Semitism unless Roberts publicly apologized and retract his praise for Carlson. Now, current and former staff that we spoke to, they really say this is part of an identity crisis that's at Heritage. It's pitting the longtime policy experts, people who have been there for years, versus this newer crop of operatives that actually came in under Roberts in 2021.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, Heritage used to be, okay, you would go there for economic papers, mm-hmm. and you go, you know, for traditional, more conservative.
What's funny about all this is who would be talking about Kevin Roberts this week if it wasn't that he stood for 3 days. I think it took 3 days where he stood for free speech for 3 days while also denunciating Nick Fuentes. So if this is the threshold of cuckery that's needed to work in an organization, forget about organizations. They are absolutely toasted. What else do we have? Oh, yeah. Josh Hammer.
He has taken a really, really, really dark path. And it's not just an anti-Semitic path. It is absolutely that, to be clear. A shockingly high percentage of his shows, of his newsletters, which one of my friends subscribes to, just to kind of check them. One of my friends recently estimated to me that Tucker's newsletters, his subscribers over the past year, something like 75 to 80% of them mentioned the word Israel or Jew. I mean, it's an obsession.
It's an obsession, but you guys are there controlling the direction, the political direction of the U.S. You're there on screen, and you're Jewish, and you don't even hide it, and you say it on your Twitter. Everything I do is for Israel. Everything I do in my political contribution is to defend Israel. That's a statement by Josh Hammer.
An actual, deep, profound obsession, and a very unhealthy obsession at that. But Tucker is not just anti-Semitic at this point. He's anti-Western civilization. You know, as my late friend Charlie...
That's their new talking point. They're trying to rotate to the idea that if you were to ever succeed at reducing Jewish power in America, that would break Western civilization. In other words, Western civilization can only exist with the Jews. The Jews were the secret ingredient to Western civilization. Yeah, let's just try. Let's just try and see if that's true.
Kirkwood would have asked, are you on team civilization or are you not? And it's not at all obvious to me that Tucker Carlson is actually playing for team civilization. He is deeply critical of pro-America, pro-civilizational forces like Ted Cruz. He is deeply critical.
Imagine thinking that something as big as Western civilization, you know, a continued existence at the top of planet Earth for perhaps the last 1,500 years or so, or maybe even more, if you want to include the Roman Empire and the Greek, if you want to go there. Imagine that this thing that goes from the Greeks to America is one of its pillar is Ted fucking Cruz. I want a statue. I want a bronze statue of Ted Cruz just lifting the planet over his back, you know, like these Greek statues carrying planet Earth. Just Ted Cruz, one man
of a plurality of the MAGA base, which he, you know, he lets the cat out of the bag on those issues when he expresses his contempt for Christian Zionists, who are at least a plurality, maybe a majority, frankly, of the Republican voting base.
But that's because of a PSYOP that has been going on for 60 years. And we're here to tell you that the PSYOP is over. Once these Christian boomers and these post-boomer generations die, you will not have the pull that you had, because we've had free speech since YouTube came. And we won't let you continue this psyop.
Other hand, he's doing propagandistic, ridiculous videos in Moscow, Russia, supermarkets, subway cars, giving puff interviews to Vladimir Putin, the president of Iran, the emir of Qatar. He's bringing on Jeffrey Sachs, a UN globalist hack.
Finally, a human being who's willing to listen to people. That's what makes Tucker a great man, a great Christian.
To kind of say that China is really our ally. He had a video a few months ago saying that Sharia law is actually not that bad. Look at Abu Dhabi and Riyadh. I mean, these are beautiful cities.
Is it that bad? I'm sure it's better than Western civilization's family courts. I'm sure it's better.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, like, literally, whose side are you on there? So it is a real, real problem. And as historically has been the case, David, for many thousands of years, the Jewish people are just a proxy of something a lot broader than that. The
age-old theory that the Jews are just an easy scapegoat. It's just everything falls onto them because they're a scapegoat. No, the Jews here in this case are being highlighted because they are there. They are overrepresented and they control too much. And it's time that we have a discussion about how we split the pie of public communication, politics, and how can eventually the Christian majority of this nation gain back control of it? That's what we're interested in. And here, bro, this is absolute. I was laughing my ass off on my bed as I was listening to this video.
And I am going to show a video, please forgive me, of one of my first introductions to this guy, Nick Fuentes, and what he was saying about Ben. This is a video of him showing himself playing Grand Theft Auto, right? A video game where you shoot people. And he's pretending that this character in the video is Ben. Let's watch.
Ah! Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's funny. Man, that makes me laugh and laugh. That's a funny one. What a chance encounter that was. I think I just saw Ben Shapiro.
Now, I am going to show a video.
There's actually another clip going around of Nick where he's actually defending Ben Shapiro, where Nick pursues Ben Shapiro in GTA, and he's trying to pursue him to engage in a debate with him. And eventually, Ben Shapiro gets shot by police, and Nick just gets an automatic rifle of some sort and starts just shooting the police and defending Ben Shapiro from the police. So I think that this little clip isn't fully illustrative of the fact that Nick has attempted to debate Ben Shapiro in GTA. Eventually, he had to roll over his body with the car. But I think it doesn't show the context. The clip doesn't capture the context properly. Rodita says, who made GTA? I wonder if there are any news in that game company. Well, they... I don't know about... I think it's Rockstar. If I remember GTA 1, GTA 2. I stopped at GTA 2, personally. Now, I think I'm going to be enjoying and I'm going to be playing GTA 6. And they just announced that it was coming out on November 2026. So that means in about 1 year, basically. In about 1 year, we should have GTA 6. I will play that game live. As soon as it's available, I think I'll purchase it. Because when we saw the trailer, it seems like it's really an anthropological look into racial America. And I think it's going to be fun to play it. Now, I didn't play GTA 3, 4, and 5. So, because I've never digested the fact that they had switched to 3D. I'm pissed. I'm pissed at the 3D world. So we'll see what it... I will just play GTA 6 straight out. I will not play 3, 4, and 5. I will just move on and accept the 3D space. Now, just to show you how cancel culture operates, PBD has revealed that once he had invited Nick Fuentes, Ben Shapiro canceled an interview with him.
So when we had BB, I would say death threats at an all-time high, no question, when BB came up. Then they agree, all right, Ben wants to come on the podcast. Then when I said, you know, I want to have Nick on, I looked at the booking team. After Ben was confirmed, I said, if they cancel, it's because of me agreeing to have Nick on. Great. We have Nick on. I show the clips. We have the conversations. Everything takes place. Fair interview. You sound like a racist here. You sound like this here. Yeah. Why are you dropping this word? So he's kind of like, you know, even manning up. 2 weeks later, Ben Shapiro cancels. Why?
So this is the problem. This is what we're faced with. So it's like very simple. There are organized Jews who are controlling the public space they are ethnically preferential toward themselves. And when you don't do what they want, they find various forms of various ways to punish you. And that is the problem of America in a nutshell right now. And we've seen it. We see how you guys do it. Everyone is talking about it. Candace Owens is coming out with the text that she was receiving by this guy. Kanye West comes out. He says, look, there was this gym trainer of mine who was threatening me. I'm going to put you in a psychiatric hospital if you keep saying these things. You have Charlie Kirk saying, as soon as I mention these subjects, I get the chain of text saying, you shouldn't. We have Nick Fuentes, friend with Cassie Dillon, and eventually, as he spoke about Israel, oh, not a friend anymore. So you have these punitive approaches that are meant to keep Christian thinkers and free thinkers in general to think away from Jews and Israeli interest in America. And that is a massive problem. It is as simple as this. As Nick was making the case yesterday, it's that simple. Unless we have an answer for this, unless this is fixed, or unless these people can carry a little stamp every time they appear publicly to reveal to their audience, look, I'm a Jew. I participate to this system of cancel culture. I do it proudly and willfully. And I believe that you guys should be punished whenever you think this or that. If you can't wear that as an advertisement and as a warning, then we'll keep having to remind people, to remind audiences that, look, this is what you see on the public space is not a natural process of truth seeking. It's a process of a bunch of organized people who want you to think in a way, and they shape what they say to you so that you end up with those conclusions. That is what you're seeing. As long as that is what we are seeing, we have a moral responsibility. We have a duty to warn people about this. Last subject of the night, the Sydney Sweeney interview is absolutely going viral because of this moment where this fucking dirty interviewer woman tries to make it look super relaxed. Since there were maybe some suggestion that white people are genetically superior in your genes ad, I wanted to give you the opportunity to, say whatever you want to say about it. And the cold look, this face right here of Sydney Sweeney has actually created a whole new meme. And it's like the fearless Nazi. I would call this meme the fearless Nazi looking you in the eyes and saying, look, I'm currently waiting whether you're going into the oven or not. Maybe it's not a good idea right now to annoy me with your stuff. Look at this moment.
The criticism of the content, which was basically that maybe specifically in this political climate, like white people shouldn't joke about genetic superiority.
And look at the serious with which Sydney Sweeney is
like that glacial. Was kind of like the criticism, broadly speaking.
I love how she maintains perfect face, unaffected emotionally. She sees where she's going. And she's like, I'm not even going to flinch. I'm not even going to give you that.
Speaking, and since you are talking about this, I just wanted to give you.
And this face also is becoming a meme. This face is also becoming a meme of its own. I don't know how it will be called, but it's like the poisonous snake trying to look like, just chill. I'm just relaxed. I don't mean anything by this question, but maybe you might want to. Those are, again, and I've been talking about this all night, but those are extortionist tactics. You're trying to suggest that maybe she should say something, or maybe her reputation will be ruined, and maybe it would be decent for her to say something. We had enough of this. And now we have Sydney Sweeney, the queen of beauty of America, riffing on this shit and just showing she can play with it and showing she can use it to drag attention to her advertisements.
You an opportunity to talk about that specifically.
I think that when I have an issue that I want to speak about, people will hear.
A non-response to the journalist that led to high virality. Sydney Sweeney, by the way, is not based, but I find it fascinating what she's doing these days. She is probably a deeply feminist, leftist woman, liberal. You know, when I watched the video, the movie where she's a nun, and she gets inseminated by force, and then she does an abortion because she has a child from a devilish, genetic modifying priest. It's like a horror movie of abortion, of a woman self aborting and killing the baby with a rock at the end. When you consider that Sydney Sweeney has starred herself in that movie as a producer, you realize that Sydney Sweeney is probably an extreme far leftist, you know, women's rights and abortion and all. But what I find interesting is that just like I think we're seeing a phenomenon that is very similar to American History X, where a Jew has produced American History X because as a Jew, he was edgy enough to think of the other side and represent it kind of properly. And although there are parts of the movie that are definitely Jewish fantasies, like the Nazi getting raped in prison, otherwise he has captured a kind of legitimate hero in Edward Norton. And despite being a Jew, he has successfully heroicized the Nazi. I believe that what Sydney Sweeney is doing is exactly the same in modern times. She is a woman with a far leftist mind, but who has seen the injustice being done to white people and who thinks, I can be edgy enough to play the other side. I can be, although I'm a far leftist and I'm against white supremacy, just like my far leftist friends, I can play the other side. I can raise the issue that there is an injustice being done to beauty. There is an injustice being done to success, and there is an injustice being done to whites. And there is another interaction in which the journalist accuses her of kind of being a slut because she includes a push bra that pushes her boobs upward in a movie, so for a sexy scene. And look at her answer. It's kind of body positivity / slap in your face of an answer.
Thinking about The Housemaid, like, there's a scene in that where you're in this home theater and you're wearing like a push-up bra. And it's just like, okay, this is
not a push-up bra, this is just my boobs.
Oh, wow.
Look at the troll face. Oh my god, this is a face out of a cartoon. I mean, I don't even know that people can have this facial expression genuinely. Look at this face. Oh wow. So it wasn't a push-up bra, those are just your boobs. And in a way, Sydney Sweeney is kind of the leftist kryptonite. It's like, no, that those are just my boobs. I don't even have to inflate them. I don't even have to have them positioned specially to offend you. They're offensive to you in their natural form. Boom! Take that, interviewer. So again, this is Sydney Sweeney doing what she does, which is okay, you are top beauty in a meritocratic system, but the meritocratic system is hated by the left. But you're a leftist too in your heart. But you're willing to play that body positivity, white positivity angle to the point where you literally say in an ad, Sydney Sweeney has good genes. That is the art. Well, today we've had two artists. We've had three. The art of James Watson to be confronting society with truths. The art of Nick Fuentes to be penetrating the leftist media with words that you couldn't have thought they would ever allow on air. And the art of Sydney Sweeney to be recruiting her own beauty to launch ultimately a unifying message between white identitarians, leftists, right-wingers, to say, hey, if you guys are going to be body positive for the 600-pound gorilla, how about you be body positive for Sydney Sweeney, too?